Well, happy Thursday, and it's a Thursday that is not too promising as far as that weather situation is concerned. So please be careful. Keep tuned to WFSU Public Media. We are plugged into all the developments as far as any kind of event cancellations or changes in schedule. We know what's going on here with the local universities and TCC shutting down at 3 o'clock. No after-school activities in Leon County Public Schools. Also, Wakulla County Schools are shut down out in Panama City. They are already closed for the day. Not a nice weather situation heading in our direction. We will be keeping an eye out on it for you throughout the day and let you know the very latest on that. In the meantime, welcome to Perspectives, because it is a Thursday, and we are going to be talking about a 100th anniversary of Great Note on today's program. And you're always welcome to be a part of that conversation, no matter where it may lead, at 850-414-1234, or you can drop us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks for tuning in. Women's suffrage, the right of women to vote in elections beginning back in the late 19th century. Besides women working for economic and political equality and social reforms and all that, women were seeking to change voting laws that allowed them to vote, not just here in the U.S., but all over the place, particularly in Europe. International Women's Suffrage Alliance, founded in 1904 in Germany, was also an equal civil rights for women movement. And women who owned property, sound familiar, gained the right to vote in the Isle of Man back in 1881. New Zealand added women to the voting rolls in 1893. And in Australia, women gained the right to vote actually in two different times, 1894 and 1911, federally in 1902. Most major Western powers extended the voting rights to women in the interwar period, including Canada, 1917, Britain and Germany, 1918, Austria and the Netherlands in 1919, finally got to the U.S. in 1920. And you might think, gosh, that's a latter-day situation. But France did not extend the right of women to vote until 1944, of all things. So a little history there. Let's bring us up to date right now, because we have two representatives from the League of Women Voters, one from the national organization and the other from right here in Tallahassee. We say good morning to Terry Cleland on the board of the League of Women Voters of Tallahassee for the past 6 years, the current president, and a self-avowed political junkie from way back, and retired from a career with the U.S. Forest Service, Terry. Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Tom.
It is so wonderful to have you on. So what'd you do with the Forest Service?
I came to Florida about 10 years ago to be the deputy supervisor for the National Forests in Florida. Those are the federal lands, 1.2 million acres, including the Apalachicola National Forest just south of Tallahassee.
Well, we are so happy to have you on here to talk about league stuff today and a big party that is up and coming. But we don't just stop at the Tallahassee chapter. We also have a representative from the former executive director of the State League here in Florida and now treasurer of the national organization, Jessica Lowminer. Hey, Jess, how you doing?
Hi, excited to be here.
Yeah, we had a relative of yours in here a couple of weeks ago. I don't know who that was. But
I don't know that guy.
never heard of him. Well, let's talk about the big celebration that's coming up first, because not just women's suffrage, the 19th Amendment being ratified 100 years ago this year, but the creation of the League of Women Voters. And was it purely informational? And either Terry or Jess, I'll leave it up to you guys. Was that the whole thing? Okay, now women need a resource to help kind of teach them how to do this? Or what was the rationale of the creation of the League?
Yeah, that was a great intro that you gave us, Tom. It reminds us that the fight to vote is a long one, and we're still undergoing it in places. And women really have been fighting for political parity in this country since its founding. You know, Abigail Adams asked her husband, "Remember the ladies when you're writing the Constitution," to which he laughed. And the effort really got going in the late 1840s, 1848, and came out of the abolitionist movement, believing in freedom of expression and political freedom for all. And there were states along the way that gave women the right to vote. It was left up to the states. Our United States Constitution really had nothing affirmative on the right to vote until the suffrage was extended to African American former slaves in 1870. And women were very disappointed that they didn't get the right to vote at that time. And they kept fighting people like Susan B. Anthony. There was this women's movement and many different organizations that fought for 50 years for the right to vote. And Susan B. Anthony actually never lived long enough to vote legally herself. So so it is generations of women who worked for this. And so finally, 1919, Congress finally ratified, I mean, finally votes on the amendment and sent it to the states to be ratified, and we needed 36 states to ratify. In February of 1920, one of these organizations led by Carrie Chapman Catt, who was a protege of Susan B. Anthony, they met. They said, look, this is going to happen. We're going to get the right to vote. Are we done with our work, or are we just beginning in our work? And they decided on February 14th, 1920, before it was ratified, actually, to form a new organization called the League of Women Voters, which was meant to help these newly enfranchised women, 20 million of them across the country, to use their newfound power wisely. So it was about educating them not only about how to go about voting, but also the issues and the candidates. And it was nonpartisan. That was an extremely important part of the formation of the League of Women Voters. And I think that's one of the key aspects that has kept it going for 100 years. And it's changed through the years, but there is a lot of fundamental about it is that it's about educating voters and empowering voters, expanding the franchise. We're still fighting for voting rights.
We'll talk a little bit about that in a second. We do have a late-breaking development here. The university, Florida State University, has just announced they are shutting down at 12:15 now instead of 3 o'clock. That is from FSU. We'll also find out if that applies to Florida A&M University as well as Tallahassee Community College. But we do know, as far as FSU is concerned, she's shutting down at 12:15. So anyway. Word to the wise, and again, please be careful on your way out and about here. And in fact, it would be a good idea not to do that if you can possibly avoid it. Jessica Lohmeyer, let's talk about, again, the ongoing need for the league. I don't know if this is just a manifestation of newly reinvigorated misogyny, but I did hear a gentleman, I won't say where or who or anything, the other night say, well, I don't know why we need a league for women voters or ain't a league for men voters. And I just wanted to put that out there. Is that, are you still getting that kind of pervasive pushback or what?
Well, one thing is I would say that the League of Women Voters is for everyone. So we do accept male members and we're excited to have men participate as allies in this movement. I mean, we believe in the power of women to create a more perfect democracy, but we believe that men can also believe in the power of women and can support us and can be part of this work to expand the franchise to all eligible citizens across the United States. So we would welcome him in the organization.
Okay. There's also, let's talk about some of those resources that are available, though there is always the famous voter's guide that is put out. It is difficult sometimes, and even in this media intensive age, to really get a good comprehensive look at who is running for which, when the dates are for registration, when the actual voting dates are. Now, of course, you can go to the Supervisor of Elections website here in Leon County. We had a pretty comprehensive one, more on that to come. But you don't get a lot of information about the individual candidates beyond a little bit of mandatory financial reporting stuff. And Terry, for the Tallahassee chapter here, what kind of resources do you make available to voters?
Oh, thanks for asking that question, because that's our bread and butter is informing voters. And so we have a guide, vote411.org. Write that down. Vote411.org is your national single resource you can go to get information about the candidates and also, you know, who you can vote for. So if you go there, we'll be populating it as the candidates are declared. And what we do is we have questions that we send out to every single candidate. And we ask them to answer them. And we tell them we will not edit these in any way. If you have a misspelling, it's going to be there. So we do not get between the voter and the candidate. And we find that that's a really good resource. I personally, the first time that I voted was when I was 19 years old. They extended the 26th Amendment, I believe it was, extended the vote to people 18 years and older. And I got to vote in my first election. I had no clue where to begin, and I found back in those days they were hard copy voter guides. We still have a few of them. But that was my introduction to the League of Women Voters, and I was so impressed. It helped me so much. I always looked for them every election. So I encourage you to go to our virtual one online, vote411.org. And also we have some hard copies, but we also do the bandwagon here with WFSU in the summertime. And we have forums, in-person forums. We'll have them for the primaries and for the general election. So stay tuned for those.
And there are some informational pieces that just came out, speaking of the supervisor of elections, from our own here in Leon County, Mark Early's office. Voter registration and party change deadline is Tuesday, February 18th. A week from this coming Tuesday, deadline to request a vote by mail ballot is Saturday, March 7th. And indeed, the supervisor mailed out 24,000 vote by mail ballots to Leon County voters, kicking off the 2020 presidential preference primary election as of yesterday. So the races are on, and you are listening to Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. We are talking League of Women Voters and voting stuff today on the program. You're invited to be part of it, 850-414-1234. We'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives. League of Women Voters, Representative Jessica Lohminer, Treasurer of the National Organization and President of the Tallahassee Chapter of the League, is Terry Cleland here with us. A reminder, you can always find Perspectives online at WFSU.org. Just go to our handy-dandy URL, click on Radio, pull down the Local Programs menu, and there will be Perspectives along with Capitol Report and all the other things that we do. We archive past shows. We try to have the most current one up and online within 24 hours of when it actually airs. And if you're just joining us again, a news break reminder, Florida State University shut down as of 12:15 this afternoon. Had been 3 o'clock. They're moving it up several hours here because of the impending nasty weather that we hope will not be too nasty. Jessica Lohminer, we got a party coming up, don't we?
That's right. That's right. Here in Tallahassee, we're going to be celebrating the League's 100th anniversary. The official birthday is on Valentine's Day, but in Tallahassee, we'll be celebrating on February 28th with a fabulous gala cocktail event up at the 22nd floor of the Capitol here in Tallahassee.
Well, certainly the best view in town. I don't mean to throw shade, although the Capitol throws shade, literally, on the folks over at the DoubleTree. But, hey, that is a great venue to have something like this. But besides the cocktails and the great view, what else will be taking place in that?
So we're going to be having a program that honors the League's history and the work that was done to ratify the 19th Amendment. So we'll actually be having some local actors who will be kind of impersonating some of our key suffragists who supported the passage of the 19th Amendment, as well as a general program about the League here in Tallahassee, our work that we've been engaged in, and also the future of the organization and voting rights across the country.
It has certainly been an evolution for the League beyond just the purely, here are the candidates, here are the dates that you vote, here are your polling places. At one time, I believe that was part and parcel before we had a good online presence for our local supervisor of elections to have even precinct maps out. But Terry Cleland, what about the other involvement that the League gets into. You are a little bit more issue-driven than perhaps the League was heretofore nowadays.
Well, the League is interesting in that we are nonpartisan on politics and candidates, but we do we do advocate for issues that we believe in, and that is from the beginning. We're both a 501c3 and a 501c4 organization for people who understand the difference. We can advocate, and we were just up at the Capitol. We had our statewide lobby days on Tuesday. We had members from throughout the state up there. And every year, it's grassroots. It comes from the bottom up. We decide on issues that we're going to advocate for in the legislature. And we do that locally as well.
When you talk about advocating for issues, though, the one overriding issue for, it would seem, any kind of voting rights organization, as the League is that so often we do not see anyone saying, let's have more early voting days, let's have greater access to the ballot, let's just say that every citizen is automatically entitled to the vote unless you fall within a very restricted category, be it felony conviction or whatever. It always seems to go in the other direction. What's up with that?
Well, I would say, I mean, my personal involvement with the League really stemmed from kind of being a firsthand witness to the 2000 election here in Florida. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was 17 when that election took place. I actually, as a high school student, several of us drove up from Pasco County where we lived and participated in the protests that were happening at that time. And frankly, as just a young person, I found it astounding that we couldn't trust the integrity of the process, that we weren't sure if every vote had been counted, that there were allegations that people who were eligible voters had been turned away with no opportunity to cast a provisional ballot, that there was so much chaos and confusion, and that ultimately it came down to the U.S. Supreme Court determining the winner. And so for me, election security and the integrity of the process, which I would also include making sure that everyone who is eligible can vote without their vote being interfered with, is paramount. And that's one of the reasons that I've been so involved with the League and why I think that we are the preeminent voting rights organization in the country, because we are not just educating people, but we're also advancing the franchise and making the case, which is a very American argument, that every person who is an American citizen deserves to vote, perhaps with some of the exceptions that you mentioned, Tom, but that we need to have confidence in the process as a country, and that when you rely on a democracy to determine who is going to be making policy decisions that affect every American, that every American needs to be confident in the way in which those elections took place.
Case in point, what we just saw in Iowa, which, albeit and admittedly not a traditional voting kind of situation, but the Iowa caucus, the complete meltdown that occurred there, still awaiting some of the final tallies on that. You'd think that after, what, more than 200 years, which is our history of voting in this republic, that it would kind of be a easy, squeezy kind of thing, isn't it?
It was not a good start to this 2020 election cycle. And we saw here in Florida in 2018 some terrible things that happened. And it illustrated a lot of problems that we had with our voting systems here in Florida, which the legislature attempted to address in their last session. And we are still fighting for better changes in our election laws in Florida here. Because Jessica's right, we have to have confidence in our systems, and not only in our own choices, confident that the choices that we're making are the ones that are good for us, but it's amazing how close our votes always are in Florida, where you have elections that there's 10,000 votes out of 8 million that make a difference in who the governor or the senator is. We've got to have systems that are accurate and work.
Because if I believe I'm not speaking on a partisan basis or out of school or whatever, but from what the founders of the Republic seemed to lean towards, even though it was just property-owning white males, yes, we know that. That was how the U.S. was founded. But still, it was government was predicated on widespread participation. And now we, at least statutorily, have about as wide as you can get with those exceptions that we mentioned before. And the fewer people who vote, the easier it is to manipulate the electorate, it seems.
Well, one thing is that we have made, across the country and in Florida, there have been election law improvements that have happened certainly since 2000. So one of the things that the League was very involved in was ensuring that there was a verifiable paper trail here in the state of Florida so that when there was a question of an election outcome, you actually could go back and conduct an audit rather than relying on machines that could potentially have software glitches or things, and then you can't even go back and recount the votes because the votes have disappeared into the electronic ether, right? So there are some really good steps that we have mm-hmm. taken as a state to secure our elections. But of course, we are in an age of, you know, hacking and cyber warfare and all of these things. So as a country, we really need to invest in election security. I mean, this just is number one priority for our democracy, and it really shouldn't be a partisan struggle. I mean, to ensure that citizens can cast their vote and that those votes will be counted accurately, really, it's a question about accuracy. That just has to be the baseline demand that we as citizens place on our legislators.
New information just in. Leon County schools all closing an hour early. High schools will be shutting down at 12:50 this afternoon. Elementary schools closing at 1:50. Middle schools will be closing at 2:50. So folks, if you're going to go pick up the kids, you now have a new target time to do that. As we mentioned a few moments ago, the Florida State University will be closing at a quarter after 12 today, again, because of the weather situation. Terry Cleland, what other resources offered through the League of Women Voters beyond the aforementioned voting guide and some of the other resources that you talked about?
Well, we have a website that has a lot of information on it. It's lwvtallahassee.org. So I recommend you go on there and get information. We're on social media. We have a Facebook page and Instagram and Twitter. So that'll keep you up to date with what's going on, what we're advocating for. So you can find our legislative priorities. There's the state of Florida, lwvfl.org website that has our legislative priorities. And, you know, like as you mentioned, our government is set up so that it works best with the consent of the governed. And it's not just about voting and who is in office. It's holding our elected and appointed leaders accountable once they're in office. And so that's what our legislative priorities are about. That's why we're up in the Capitol in session today, actually, watching what they're doing and having our voice heard.
And not just, as you said, Terry, the people who are involved in an election. In Florida, we also have issues. Now, in some states like California, you can have citizens' initiatives when it comes to actual state law. Florida, we don't have that, but we can amend the Constitution. And there are some issues that are floating around. As we're speaking here down at the Capitol, they're talking about that right now.
I had to decide whether to come here this morning or go to the Capitol to talk about the bill that is up there that is going to make it harder for citizens to put initiatives on the ballot because we've been successful at those, for instance, Amendment 4, which extended the vote in Florida to most felons who have served their terms of their sentences. And there's some that just didn't like that, and so they felt they had to pass a law to implement that, which we're fighting about in court right now, because we felt that it took away what the citizens asked for and voted for in that amendment. So we're always working. You know, election law is our basic fight that we fought against gerrymandering here in Florida, and we won, and they had to change their districts, which made it a little bit more balanced representation in the state. So we also advocate for education, for quality public education. That's something that the League has always been concerned about. Natural resources, you know, clean water and air. Who can argue with that? And our future, you know, energy efficiency and solar. I have solar panels on my house because the League of Women Voters created a solar co-op that made it easy for me to put them up. And when I got those, I said, hey, how about an electric car to go with them? So we're working on preserving our natural environment and health care. Access to quality health care is very important to us as well.
And yet in this day and time, all of these issues that you just mentioned have been politicized to a very, very high degree. If you have a Prius, I bet you're a Democrat. If you've got an F-250 with one of these stick-em-up pipes that you can inject a little bit of diesel fuel in there and smoke out the folks behind you, you may be a Republican. I mean, this is where we are right now.
And it's interesting because it's changed through the years, too. The parties have changed their positions through the years, and I think that is part of the brilliance of that decision 100 years ago for the League not to be partisan, because the parties have changed through the years.
That's
we
right.
haven't.
That's right. We always have stood by our nonpartisanship policy, which is that we do not endorse political parties. We do not endorse candidates. We never have. I hope that we never will. But we do take positions on issues that our members have researched. We have a very, some would say, slow,
yeah.
maybe too slow, deliberative process.
Deliberative process
of studying issues, of gathering research, and then ultimately our members adopt positions based on those studies through consensus. And so it cannot be, you know, a position that's adopted of, oh, well, it's 10 folks who were involved and, you know, 6 want to adopt this and 4 don't. I mean, we really craft those messages to the point where everybody can stand behind them within the organization. So we're proud of our process. We're proud of the advocacy work that we do. We truly do believe that we're advancing democracy in this country and that we're helping to, frankly, expand the number of people who are involved in government, who understand what issues are coming before their local electeds, their state electeds, and through Congress. And so we're proud of our work. We're looking forward to another 100 years. I think folks who are listening to this broadcast are aware of some of the current threats that our democracy is under, that, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there. There are a lot of conspiracy theories. There are a lot of, frankly, structural barriers that prevent citizens from engaging in the process and being fully enfranchised. But we're working to educate voters, to provide factual, reliable information through things like Vote 411. And then through our advocacy work, we're working to make sure that citizens are involved in decision-making and that, again, our elected officials are held accountable when they're doing things that, frankly, the majority of the citizens might not like if they knew about.
850-414-1234, the number to call for Perspectives. You can also drop us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. Let's go to line one where Joe awaits. Hey, Joe, thanks so much for calling Perspectives. How you doing today? Hey, Joe.
Hey, I'm not sure if you already covered this topic, but I'm interested to know what the League is doing to advocate for open primaries. There are so many independent voters that are just excluded so much from the voting process. What is the League doing on promoting open primaries?
Take it away, Terry.
I am so glad you asked. Joe, I was just going to mention that the League is advocating for a proposed constitutional amendment called All Voters Vote. It was one of these things that we went through our own deliberative process, and not everybody agreed. But we came out saying that we should open that ballot up to as many as possible. regardless of party. We have more than 3 million registered voters in Florida who do not belong to, who are not a Democrat or a Republican, who are shut out of the primary that's coming up, the presidential primary, very quickly. And so one thing is we're getting information out that you have time to change your voter registration before that primary, February 18th. If you are on a non-affiliated party registered right now, and you'd like to vote in that primary, you can change, but it has to be to a Democrat or a Republican to vote in the primary. You can change it afterwards, but I think it's crazy that we make people go through that. And so they're looking to do in it's going to hope to get it on the ballot. It'll be like we do locally, where we have nonpartisan local elections where we do not know what the party affiliation is of our local candidates. So it would just be the top two candidates out of the primary that go to the general, regardless of party.
We're talking to Terry Cleland and Jessica Lohmeiner, both affiliated with the League of Women Voters. And you are listening to Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. Please give us a call if you want to join the conversation, 850-414-1234, and we'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back to Perspectives. We are off and running in the electoral season, not just because of the Iowa caucuses, of which we actually had some expat Iowans in Florida who were caucusing the other night, too, which I thought was really cute. I think they made their report. I don't know if their apps worked or not. Voter registration and party change deadline, as we just mentioned, is going to be a week from this coming Tuesday, February 18th. Deadline to request a vote by mail ballot, Saturday, March 7th. Early voting period, Saturday, March 7th to Sunday, March 15th, and then Election Day, Tuesday, March 17th. You go, no, it's in November. No, this is the presidential preference primary in Florida. See how complicated it is? We have multiple election dates, so you kind of have to know what's going on. That is from Mark Early, our supervisor of elections here in Leon County. As Joe was saying, Jessica Lohmeiner, without an open primary, folks with no party affiliation can't cast a ballot until the general election. They can't participate in the primary. Some observers say that the way it is now, you can only be a D or an R. It contributes to hyperpartisanship, divisiveness, all that kind of thing. What's your take?
Well, I think certainly not allowing independent and unregistered or non-affiliated voters, NPA, no party affiliation voters, to participate in primaries, as you say, the end result could be further polarization. But frankly, it's also just unfair because they are citizens who deserve to have an opportunity to participate in any election and also to help elect candidates who represent the values that they feel as Americans. So I think there's a fairness argument and also an impact argument related to that issue. And so we want to see open primaries. We want to see people be able to participate and help. Frankly, a lot of times as well, there's a write-in candidate kind of loophole that will close a primary when really the outcome of the election is ultimately decided in the primary. And so you might say, okay, well, this seat is likely to be, let's say, a Democratic seat. You have a very strong Democratic candidate who's running for that seat. They've raised a lot of money. They're kind of the likely winner. And essentially to prevent a general election have to run for the general election, especially if there is no Republican who's filed to run for that seat because, hey, you know, it's likely to be a Democratic seat, then the Democratic primary becomes the vehicle for determining who's going to win, most likely, again. And so if you have some kind of person who's not really intending to run a real campaign, but they file to run as a write-in candidate, well, then that you know, election is essentially decided in the primary, and you as a, you know, an independent voter, by the time it gets to the general election, there is no candidate on the ballot for you to vote for.
You're saying that the process can be manipulated.
It's been known to happen, but we are fighting back. We are, as Terry mentioned, working on a constitutional amendment that would help create a little more parity in the process. But we need citizens to be involved. I mean, thank you, Joe, for calling in to bring this up. But we hope that you'll join the league and help us.
Well, that's it. The league membership is open. And how do you join the league?
Go to our website, lwvtallahassee.org. You can donate or join online. We are also at the Saturday Market every single Saturday morning in downtown Tallahassee. You can register to vote with us at our table there or join us. We have monthly what we call hot topic events where we'll have speakers on issues of interest to the citizens, and anyone can come. We advertise that on our webpage and on Facebook. So, we would love to have you join us. And when you join locally, you also join at the state and the national level. Your membership dollars support local, state, and national efforts because it takes all of us pulling together. Right now, until during our centennial year, students are free. So our members can be 16 years and older, and we encourage all of our students. We have been working on the campuses of TCC, FAMU, and FSU. We've got student members on all three campuses. We had parties at the polls in the last election to just have information, because these are first-time voters. We want to create voters. It's no secret that young people vote at about half the level, even less than half the level of people my age. And they're letting their voice be silenced by not voting. And sometimes it's just a matter of having information. Some of them are from other parts of the state. They don't understand how they can vote either from their hometown or in Tallahassee. So we're encouraging to get out and work with those students. So we encourage you to visit our website, visit us at one of our events, come to our celebration. We're happy to sign you up.
We know that people get excited about presidential elections to a larger degree than they do off-year elections or purely local elections. And Jessica Lowe Minor, in full disclosure, you have a personal relationship with a certain county commissioner here in Leon. How do you get people energized about the people? I'm showing my bias here. I'm sorry. The people who have more impact on your day-to-day existence in a community than perhaps your congressperson, your U.S. senator, or even the president of the United States, your county commissioners, your city commissioners, the constitutional officers in your community. Heck, the people who are in the water, boards that we have around here, those people make decisions that have actual, tangible, day-to-day impact. How do you get people excited about that?
Well, I think one of the things we do locally so well is we provide a lot of education and a lot of opportunities for citizens to come to forums and debates, to hear local candidates, to meet local candidates and ask them questions themselves, and then also to go to vote411.org, where they can, of course, get information about the presidential candidates, the federal candidates, the state legislative candidates, but also local level candidates. I mean, that really is the platform to go to figure out if your voter registration is up to date, to figure out if you might need to update your mailing address if you've moved, or, you know, all kinds of figure out where your polling place is. I mean, there's just a lot of information there, including information about candidates. And I think the first thing that citizens need to do is really educate themselves about who is on the ballot and what do those people think.
Gee, what are the issues and what are their connection to my family and my world and everything else? And then go from there and making decisions that affect you.
Yeah, and you know, we are an all-volunteer organization. We have not a single paid position, and we do it all ourselves. So the other thing that we have is committees at the local level who can pick up projects. I mean, pick up projects. Speaking of which, on Saturday, our Climate Change and Sustainability Committee is going to be doing their monthly street cleaning. And they go visit the recycling center. They're meeting with our elected officials about reducing our use of single-use plastics. We have our education committee that goes and meets regularly with the school board. So if you want to be active also, and not only just support us with money, but with your time, we have got lots of opportunities for people to get involved.
Yeah, who knows, you might wind up walking in a parade before it's all over.
Oh, my goodness, I'm so glad you brought that up. We're so excited. You know, the League of Women Voters, the suffragists, are known for their marches. 100 years ago, they marched on Washington to get the vote, wearing all white. Well, we're going to commemorate that at the Springtime Tallahassee Parade. Not only the suffragists from 100 years ago, but through all the different eras. So we have the suffragists and Rosie the Riveter and the ERA era, which the ERA is something we could talk about too. And then the future voters, with they'll have electric cars and we'll have, you know, space uniforms and things like that. So it's not only about where we've come from, but where we're going too.
You mentioned the ERA. Well, Virginia just did its thing there.
It's a similar battle to getting the right to vote. You know, it was first introduced into Congress in 1923 by one of the suffragists, Alice Paul, who got the right to vote. She said, okay, we got the right to vote. Now we need to have an Equal Rights Amendment. And we came so close. It's very much mirrors that fight to get the right to vote. We got very, very close, and it hasn't died. That idea has not died. So it is back. The League of Women Voters supports passage of the ERA, and we hope it happens.
And now we have 38 states that have ratified the ERA, but there's a question about whether or not Congress had passed a deadline for when ratification needed to take place. And so three of the states that have ratified after that deadline passed. And so one of the things we're working on at the congressional level is to urge Congress to actually lift that deadline so that we now have all of the states needed for ratification. So that's stay tuned, but please join us if you're interested in that fight.
It's sort of an expiration date that was imposed after the fact, it sounds like. I remember very, oh God, I'm dating myself here. In 1982, in the Florida legislature, there was the vote on the Equal Rights Amendment. And, I guess up until the time of the Parkland tragedy, and of course the meltdown in the 2000 election, Tallahassee had not seen this type of a crowd. People came from all over the state, pro and con. And in the morning, the State House of Representatives passed the ERA, and it went on to the state Senate for an afternoon vote. And these were in the days, folks, back in the Paleolithic times, the Democrats controlled state government in Florida, particularly Democrats from the Florida Panhandle. Folks like Dempsey Barron, W.D. Childers, these folks, good old boys, I guess you could call them in today's parlance. And that Senate vote came down to, I think there was just a handful of opponents who tipped the ERA vote in the negative, and it failed. And I thought the Capitol was going to explode. It was a very dramatic situation for sure.
Well, and Florida still has not ratified the ERA, so we are not one of the three states that ratified after the deadline.
Yeah, we still could do it, but you know what? We didn't ratify the 19th Amendment until 50 years after the fact, so we have shown to be a little bit behind the times.
No, we like to be deliberative in Florida. You know, make sure that everything is done. Again, if you're just joining us, Jessica Lowe Minor, the treasurer of the National Organization League of Women Voters, Terry Cleland, president of the League of Women Voters of Tallahassee, and that one-century celebration that is coming up here at the Florida Capitol on the 28th.
Yeah, and, you know, we're also going to have the FAMU Choir is going to be with us with some inspirational music and They're going to Carnegie Hall themselves in the spring, I think. So we're going to get to meet some of the historical figures from the movement that are so inspiring. And also we're saying if you want to get dressed up like a suffragist, have some fun. So I've got my own little like Downton Abbey style outfit from the 20s that I'm going to be wearing. And gentlemen are invited to wear yellow roses because back when we were fighting for the 19th Amendment, a sign of which side they were on, the anti-women's vote wore red roses and the pro-women's vote wore yellow roses. So there'll be a little bit of symbolism, just a lot of fun, too, at the Capitol. You know, we're going to be atop the power structure of the whole state of Florida, where we belong, in my opinion. And there's going to be a lot of other events by other organizations throughout the year. You'll see a lot of people are excited about celebrating this century. So keep your eye and listen to WFSU for some of these events and look out for a lot of fun things happening this year and interesting as well.
And again, we will give a plug for Bandwagon over on WFSU-TV, which has always had the participation of the League of Women Voters. We certainly could not do that forum without them helping us to get everything organized, the amount of information that has to be accumulated for each of the candidates. And then they get there anywhere between 2.5 and 3 minutes to do their spiel, and then they are sung into submission by the Capitol Cordsmen, which is always a lot of fun. So that'll be coming up here a little bit later on as we get into the summer.
I just want to say we would also love to hear from family members of league leaders. We're doing a little bit of history, looking at our history, and it seems to be the kind of thing that's handed down through generations, mothers and daughters and granddaughters. And so if there's anybody out there who's listening who has a story to tell us about their involvement in the League of Women Voters, or if they have any old pictures, we're also gathering up our own history. So we would love to hear from you. Go to our website, and you can send us an email through there. See us on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
Heading now towards the denouement of this edition of Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. Before we go, Jessica Lowminer, any final comments here as other league folks in the national organization keep the pressure on the folks in D.C. to, hey, don't forget about suffrage. That fight continues.
Definitely. I mean, we are proud of the work that's been done over the last 100 years, but, you know, we're really hunkering down for a serious fight for our nation's future right now. And as the League of Women Voters, we're prepared for that fight. We're focused on defending democracy. We're focused on empowering voters. And we welcome everybody who believes that America should have a free and fair democracy to join our organization.
And everybody can vote.
Your vote is
your
voice.
With very few exceptions.
Yes, your vote is your voice. Don't let somebody else take that power from you. I mean, you know, people have fought and been injured and died. Women 100 years ago were beaten and starved and imprisoned to get this right to vote. And, you know, just as we fought wars, I just take it very seriously, and I encourage people to take their power, claim your power, and vote.
It's the one thing that that we all can do, and at the very, very minimum is to cast that ballot when it is time to do so. And for local, state, federal, constitutional amendments, go to the league site, find out, arm yourself with the information that's needed, and then make that informed decision.
That's right. Be an informed voter and a lifetime voter.
I appreciate it so much, folks, coming on here. Terry Cleland, the president of the League of Women Voters of Tallahassee, and Jessica Lowminer, treasurer of the National Organization for League of Women Voters. And we will see you guys on the 28th. Happy anniversary, and thank you so much for coming on Perspectives. And we'll see you, Terry, when it's time for Bandwagon.
Okay? Oh, and don't forget to tune into Voting Matters Wednesdays at 3:04.
That is right.
We do a minute on Voting Matters.
And it does matter to us all. Thanks for coming on Perspectives, guys. Perspectives produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Evan Rossi and Lydell Rawls behind the glass today. Thanks, guys. I'm Tom Flanagan. We talked about the right of women to vote today, but what about voting rights for Florida felons? We mentioned that earlier in the program. Well, despite passage of that state constitutional amendment about the issue almost 2 years ago, the execution of it remains a matter of contention and ongoing debate. We are going to address that right here next week on Perspectives. And be careful today, please.
Perspectives is a production of WFSU Public Media. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts.